Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We've got all kinds of great music for you this week on the show. Up first is Texas-based R&B singer Tortia Lynn talking about her sophomore album Inappropriate and lead single Super Bad. We then chat with folk indie rock group C. Perry about coming from a northern Canadian town and releasing their new single Molly Shoes. We wrap things up with Toronto-based jazz pianist Robbie Botos discussing his debut CD called Moving Forward and what it takes to be a successful jazz musician in this day and age.
Capture your need for sound.
This artist has had a few curveballs thrown her way in life, but she's overcome them and is back and ready to rock with her sophomore album, Inappropriate, which delivers a unique R&B style that will definitely draw you in. Tortia Lynn, thank you so much for joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Definitely. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I got to start off, I think, back, you know, with your roots. How did the church play a part in you kicking off your music career?
Well, you know, that was basically my first stage, really. You know, I got my first solo in the youth choir by the time I was 3 years old. My mom had me at 15, so I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, who spent a lot of time at the church. And so I pretty much was there Wednesday through Sunday in Bible study and youth choir. And, you know, it was the first time I think I was able to experience that, hey, you know, this is something I really like. I like singing. I like what it makes me feel. I like the attention. So even as a three-year-old, so, you know, kind of basically where it all started.
Looking back, did you learn the most while you were training musically, you know, at the church and in school? Because I know you did a lot of stuff there in band and choir. Or do you think you really sort of started to just get a sense of yourself and all that sort of stuff once you hit the world full on?
I would say I definitely started to get a sense for myself once I hit the world, you know, kind of full on. Because, you know, back then, obviously, I had my different artists that I, you know, was in love with and in awe and listened to every day. I think when you do that, you have your idols, they kind of influence your sound a little bit. And it wasn't until I kind of got out on my own, even leaving my girl group, you know, that I started kind of feeling out my own way and my own sound and kind of how I wanted to be and what I wanted to be as an artist.
Who would you say did influence you growing up musically?
Man, you know, I heard a lot of old school music in my house because I lived with my grandparents the majority of my youth. So I was definitely into like Diana Ross and, you know, Lena Horne, Denise Williams, Minnie Riperton. I mean, you know, all those greats.
Would you say that, you know, they have somehow on some level seeped into the sound you're producing even today? Because I know, for example, I'm a huge Janet Jackson fan and I just feel like she follows me wherever I go. What about you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it's almost inevitable for that not to happen. You know, I definitely hear a lot of that breathy, you know, ethereal tone that Janet Jackson has in my sound sometimes. I hear a little Diana Ross sometimes. I still am a huge fan of, you know, Whitney Houston, the Jill Scotts. I hear some of that in my sound, and it's not even on purpose. You know, it kind of just naturally happens. When you idolize someone, you tend to study them. You study them, their sound down to their core, and it kind of just becomes a part of you.
I have to ask you this because I don't often get a chance to interview R&B singers, but I love when I do because that's the type of music that I love to listen to. And it's funny because, you know, I remember back in the 90s, you know, with the Janets, with the Whitneys, and also, you know, with the girl groups too, like Jade and TLC, there was just such a great R&B sound that was coming out then. And I would say into the early 2000s with like Blue Cantrell and of course Mary J. Blige, who transcends everything. But I find like R&B music almost went the way of EDM if we look at sort of what Usher's been doing for the last little while. And obviously that's worked for him. But I feel like R&B is coming back a little bit, just even in the last year or so. Do you find that the R&B world is heading back to where it needs to be?
Totally. I agree with you 100%, you know. And it's benefiting artists like me who, you know, don't tend to go that. I feel like R&B kind of took on almost like a mixture of hip hop, kind of fused into hip hop, where that line that separates the two was kind of getting blurred. And I think now, you know, we're going back into like true R&B, which I love that. You know, you've got even artists that are coming out that are successful right now, like Kay Michelle. She is what I would consider definitely, you know, when you listen to her album, she's kind of leaning way more on that R&B side of that line, as opposed to, you know, some artists who kind of ride that line and kind of lean more hip hop. So I love that, you know. Even with artists like Beyonce, you know, with her newest album, even they lean more club sound, more club bangers, more hip hop, you know. You could almost hear her rapping more than singing. And so I love that. I love that old school R&B, that true R&B is kind of being more accepted and coveted now.
I have to ask you this because I know you're from Texas, and I believe if I read correctly from Dallas, I'm a huge Erykah Badu fan. So I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously she has such a sound going on, but, you know, we can sort of transcend that into the Jill Scotts of the world and the Angie Stones, that sort of progressive soul, even that Philadelphia kind of puts out. Where does that sit with you? I know you mentioned that Jill Scott is a bit of an influence. Do you find that both of those things can kind of be married together?
Oh, totally. I definitely think, you know, they could be married together. Look at the success that Jill Scott has had, Ledisi, you know, Erykah Badu, they all kind of sit in that same vein, you know, and I think even that neo soul kind of sound is coming back. You know, it's a funny story. Erykah Badu actually started at my church, First Baptist of Hamilton Park here in Dallas. We went to the same, you know, obviously she's older than me, but we went to the same church and even had the same choir director. She was long gone by the time I was a part of the First Baptist of Hamilton Park choir, but it was just funny to kind of be in that choir knowing that someone as amazing as Erykah Badu sat in the same choir stand and was trained and taught by the same choir director, Miss Gazee. I'll never forget her. But, you know, yeah, I definitely think that I definitely think they're kind of married together. And
excellent. Hanging out with us on the show is R&B recording artist Tortia Lynn. Make sure to check out her website, tortialynn.com. I have to ask you this. I sort of mentioned off the top that you've had, you know, a bit of a rough ride in the last while. I know things are going better, but why did you actually decide to walk away from your music career for a while?
You know, the music industry was just, you know, it's tough. It's tough. And, you know, I had been trying to get on since I was like 15 years old, you know, in a girl group, and had to make that choice whether to just, once I finished high school, to either chase my dream, you know, pack up, move to LA and, you know, just kind of grind it out, or go to college first, you know. And I chose to go to college and got back into singing. And, you know, it's when you're chasing something for so long and you have so many doors closed in your face. And, you know, I was right on that edge, just finished my, you know, first album. And I ended up getting pregnant. You know, my husband and I got pregnant and I miscarried, or I guess she wasn't even really miscarried, I had a stillbirth, about 7.5 months into the pregnancy. And that was just real devastating for me. And I kind of just, after that, went into a shell and didn't really want to do anything. And I didn't touch music or record or anything for a while, you know. Luckily, I had the support of my family and friends kind of pushing me to get back up on that horse and not just, you know, throw it all away. But there was some, that was a pretty dark time in my life. I just didn't see pretty much positivity in anything or even have the strength, you know. So, you know, I'm just thankful that I've had my family reminding me every day that, you know, this is what I was put here to do and that I needed to do it. So
now, when they told you or helped sort of push you in the right direction to come back to music, did it finally just sort of click for you? Like, was it sort of just finally like, yeah, I need to do this, I need to get back to singing and doing what I do?
You know, it's kind of gradual. They're like, you know, just get back in the booth and see how you feel. And I was like, you know what? You know, there's no harm in that. I will. I'm going to get back in the booth. I'm going to see how I feel. And, you know, I linked up with an amazing producer out of Dallas, Symbolic One, and got in the booth with him just, you know, just for like a day session to see how I felt. And you hit the nail on the head. It just clicked. The minute I put the headphones on, got in the mic and started recording that first song, I didn't want to leave the studio. I think I stayed there for 12 hours that day, 12 hours straight, that session. I just felt back at home and I felt a joy and a happiness that I had been missing, but didn't really realize why I was missing it. And I haven't turned back since that day.
So. That's amazing. Now, I have to ask you this. I know that you had a business for a while before you came back to music, and I'm wondering if that has helped you with the music career, because as you and I both know, it's such a different game than it was back in the 90s when record companies were coming at you and willing to shell out dollars, even in the early 2000s. Yeah. And, you know, I've been fortunate to speak to a bunch of, you know, not really R&B singers, but singer-songwriters coming up and jazz artists, and they all sort of tell me, which I already kind of knew, but like they have to be their own businessman or businesswoman. How does that play into what you're doing?
It's definitely true. You kind of, once you know the business side of it, I think it definitely helps you tremendously and kind of saves you and protects you from decisions that you probably would have made that would have hindered your career before without kind of gaining that knowledge. So, you know, running my business for all those years kind of taught me a lot of things, from negotiating skills to just, you know, the psyche of other people and their mind and, you know, how it all works out there in the business world. I mean, it's kind of been invaluable just kind of having those years of experience with that, you know, and we all know chasing a dream is mighty expensive. So being able to have, you know, some sort of company on the side that can kind of help fund the adventures that you want to do regarding your music, it's perfect. It goes hand in hand.
I wonder how you have time for it all, because I know you've got the singing career. I know you have little kids at home. I know you've got a husband. Yeah. So how do you manage to do it? Because I kind of feel like you are Whitney Houston's I'm Every Woman.
I don't know. You know, I guess when you want something bad enough, it's true. It sounds cliche, but you will find a way, you know. And I definitely have to go ahead and shout out, you know, all the people that helped me. You know, being back in Dallas, you know, definitely helped, because I have my family here. My husband's family's here. So, you know, grandparents to help you with the kids, you know, when you're recording or shooting music videos, or even if, you know, I like to bring my kids with me a lot. And so, you know, I'm blessed to be able to bring my kids and have my mom come and help. Because I want my kids to see, you know, me working hard and see me chasing a dream, so that they have that kind of instilled in them that they should never stop, you know, chasing their dreams. And, you know, my kids have a blast. They love it. And, you know, having a husband that supports you and believes in you and is your number one fan definitely makes it a lot easier to do. And, you know, my husband helps me out tremendously, even with my business, you know, and my friends, you know, I have an amazing support system. You cannot do this without a support system.
Talk to us about your social media presence, because I know you have a lot of fans actually on Twitter, which I think is fantastic. How important is it for you to hear from them, for them to hear from you, and the fact that I think social media is able to push artists like you forward?
Oh, man. It's such, like you said, it's so different from like the 90s. I actually think it's better. I love it because it gives you a way to, it gives a fan, like, I remember being a fan of like Janet Jackson, you know, back in the day, and wishing there was a way I could just be like, hey, Janet, you know, which you couldn't do that back then. Now with social media, if a fan wants to say, what's up, Torsha, or just let me know, you know, hey, I really like the new single you just dropped, all they have to do is drop me a line on Twitter and I'm going to see it. You know, back in the olden days, you had to write a letter to the fan mail, and you never know if they ever seen buckets and buckets of fan mail. You know, so I mean, I love it. It's great for me because, you know, like I said, it's tough out here. You might go, you know, months or, you know, weeks without anything positive, you know, happening in career, door after door slams in your face. And then you get on social media and you're quickly reminded that, you know, there are still people out there that appreciate your music. I love logging on and, you know, having a fan let me know what, you know, they like this or didn't like that. I even like some, you know, negative stuff. I had one guy that was like, you know, the lyrics are great, the song was dope, but whoever mixed that for you did a horrible job. And I'm like, okay, well, let me look into that. Let me look into who's mixing my stuff for me now. You know, I mean, I love it. I love it. And I like being able to write back, you know, to my fans. And I mean, I have fans who will say, you know, I want to send you this song that I wrote or these lyrics, I think you'd sound great singing it. I love that. I love being able to connect with someone maybe all the way in Newfoundland or all the way in even New York. It's like we never met before, but we're talking about music, you know, writing a song together or, you know, scheduling possibly doing a collaboration, you know. So different. That would have never happened back in the early 90s. So I love it.
I want to ask you as well about being in Dallas, you know, because I think a lot of people, I know up here, for example, in Canada, a lot of people end up in Toronto, which is sort of the mecca of, you know, Canadian music, or Vancouver, Montreal. Those are the big hotspots. Obviously, in the States, we know it's New York and Nashville and Los Angeles. But obviously, there is a burgeoning scene, I would assume, in Dallas. We know that Erica is from there, and obviously, you're from there. Mm-hmm. What's it like, you know, doing your thing in Dallas? And do you ever feel the need that you may have to go to New York or may have to go to Los Angeles?
You know, I definitely often feel like, I might have to go to New York or Los Angeles, but not permanently. You know, that's what I like, being right there, right in the center, you know, the country, because it's just a two and a half hour flight to LA or 2.5 hour flight to New York. So I can get to where I need to be from right here and still be able to raise my kids where I grew up, which is, you know, it's important to me that I want my kids to kind of have a Southern upbringing. But I mean, I think there's so much talent here in Dallas, you know, untapped talent. And I want to be a part of that, you know, scene that kind of puts Dallas on the map. I like the idea of being a part of something that's growing, something that's on the verge, about to bust. Like, I love that. You know, I feel like in LA, it's a lot harder to break through because you kind of are a small fish in this giant pond of just everybody, trying to go for the same thing. And I feel like in Dallas, there is a big music scene here, but it's not as noisy, for lack of a better word, as New York and LA. There's just so much noise there. And it's, you know, I just love the idea of being a part of something that's growing and on the verge of breaking.
Talk to us about your new CD. It's your sophomore CD, Inappropriate. How different is it from your debut CD? And what's the overall, you know, the overall vibe of the disc?
My new CD this new project is definitely different than my first project. It's, you know, my first project was very, for lack of a better word, fluffy, very, you know, rainbows and daffodils and butterflies. And this new album is very raw, very vulnerable. It's, you know, it's very real and authentic. You know, I was able to write from a place and come from a place of, you know, just pure honesty, kind of saying and writing about and singing about whatever I was feeling and wanted to say. You know, my freshman album was more, I was more guided and more directed by, you know, producers and, you know, people I was working with. But with this album, I kind of just said, I don't care if this is what I want to write about, I'm going to write about it. And I don't care if someone thinks it's not appropriate or proper or perfect, it's real. And that's all that matters.
Lead single is called Super Bad. I've heard it. I think it's amazing. We're actually going to play it on the show in a bit. Why did you decide for that to be the lead track?
You know, I felt like at the time when I released Super Bad, you know, it's right after summer. And at that time of the year, you know, it's summertime. So everybody's, you know, they're hanging out. There's a beach. They're clubbing. It's like party time. So I definitely wanted to pick a song off the album that was more upbeat in tempo. And just a fun song. And for me, it was kind of like my woman's anthem, you know, just all about woman empowerment. And, you know, Super Bad's more of a state of mind than anything. And, you know, all of us women have that super bad trait in us. And I just thought it was great, you know, to come out of the gate with something that was, you know, kind of bringing women together and positive.
What is next for you? You know, you seem very focused, obviously, on your family. Obviously, I know your career is really important. Where do you want your singing career to take you? Where do you see Tortia Lynn in the next 8 months to a year?
Next 8 months to a year, I hope to have one released, the whole project, the whole album, because, you know, we're done with the whole project now, so it's about time to release that. And I want to hopefully, within the next 8 months to a year, I want to be on tour, a big tour, opening for somebody great. That would be, for me, a huge step. And I would view that as, you know, some pretty quick success. I mean, that in a perfect world, I would love to go on tour.
That's amazing. And we wish you all the best of luck. And thank you so much for spending time with us on the show this week. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That's R&B recording artist Tortia Lynn. Check out her website, TortiaLynn.com.
Hey, this is Tortia Lynn, and you're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Shots. on the beat, keep the song on the beat.
Y'all can't see us, or much less be us. We're all my divas, we're running the show.
Kelly Alexander Show is bassist Sean Fisher from the folk indie rock group Sea Perry. The band hails from Sudbury, Ontario, Canada, and has released their EP Why the Folk Not back in 2013, and is open for the likes of the Strumbellas, Great Big Sea, and Tokyo Police Club. They've got a brand new single out called Molly's Shoes, and we cannot wait to hear what else this rockin' trio has going on. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing, Kelly?
I am doing very well. We're very excited to have you on the Kelly Alexander Show this week. And I guess to kick things off, I wanted to ask how you guys came together and why the name Sea Perry.
Well, we were like every good relationship, we were friends first. I was playing in a band, and so we're chatting, Chris. And we did some shows together, and we became friends, you know, through that kind of process. Mutual interest, I guess, right? And yeah, the guy's band kind of, you know, fell to the side, and we decided, hey, well, you know, we're already friends. Why don't we just, you know, play music together? So that's what we did. And I guess the rest is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then the band name, like Chris and Chad were playing around with some ideas, and they were calling themselves C, which stands for Chad, and Perry, which stands for Port Perry, where Chris is from. So together that was the letter C and Perry. And then when I came aboard, you know, the C changed to an S, and it just made sense to be the C. So C Perry.
Got it. That's very cool. I wanted to ask you, has it been challenging getting noticed in the Canadian music industry because you guys come from a town that's, you know, fairly far north? We actually have people that are listening, you know, overseas in Australia and Japan. So I'm just trying to sort of paint a picture for them. You know, Sudbury is at least 5 hours north of Toronto, if I've got my math right. So has it been difficult sort of getting noticed?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like, you know, traveling in the United States or even, I guess, southern Ontario or southern Canada, where, you know, things are more geographically close to one another. But like, that's kind of like the thing in Canada anyway, right? Like, you know, you go west and it's far drives everywhere you go. So, I mean, you kind of have to make a conscious decision of if you want to do this, you know, and you want to get out to, you know, the people, and you're going to have to travel, you know? So I guess to answer your question, you know, like we kind of went into it with the mindset that we were willing to, you know, travel and get out there, right?
Do you guys have any intentions of moving to a bigger city like a Toronto or a Montreal or a Vancouver?
Yeah, we've talked about that. We've actually talked about New York, or I know the guys would love to move to LA, but like we've talked about Montreal, Toronto. It just depends. Like if we had it our way, we'd be on the road all the time. You know what I mean? So having a residence wouldn't really be the concern, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys have been described as a folk indie rock group. Does that sort of encompass what you guys produce? Like, does that sit well with you, Sean?
Not really. I mean, I don't know. I think that we're like Canadian music. Like, I think that Canadian music has, it's kind of like its own genre. Like, there's some bands that are just inherently Canadian. And I think that's what we sound like. I think we sound Canadian. I think that there's genres that maybe that would fall into. But I'd say, like, if anybody asked me who we are and they wanted to get specific, maybe I would say, like, indie folk rock pop or something. But most people, I'd say, you know, we're Canadian rock band.
Joining us on the show is Sean Fisher, bassist for the group C. Perry. Make sure to check out their website, cperry.com. Would you say that each of you in the band has been influenced by different genres of music, or are you all, you know, pretty much cut from the same cloth?
No, we all have very, very different musical tastes. I mean, we also have things that are similar as well, but, you know, we all like a lot of different music, which really, you know, creates the melting pot, you know, of sound you get, you know, when you listen to our songs and stuff. Maybe more so our newer songs, I'd say. Like, the old stuff, I guess, is more kind of folk roots kind of based, I guess. But yeah, I mean, me myself, like, I listen to a lot different music than, you know, Chad would listen to on a daily basis, and same with Chris, you know. And it's cool because we can influence each other, you know, when we're on the road and stuff. It's like we'll listen to a whole album from whoever, you know, like, say Chris wants to listen to something, we'll listen to something, and we're really open-minded about it, you know, because we're just, like, music lovers in general.
Is there any producer or artist that you guys would love to collaborate with?
David Bowie.
Right. That's good.
I would love to work with David Bowie. I mean, like, he's just, like, the biggest inspiration to me, and just his whole concept, you know, to music. And, you know, I love synth stuff, and I love, you know, just weird sounds and, you know, different rhythms and stuff like that. And I think I'd also like to work with somebody that, you know, isn't as notorious, like, in the industry, like someone that is hungry. And not to say that David Bowie isn't hungry, I'm sure he is, but, you know, like, there's a lot of people that are at a, you know, certain level, and they're hungry and they want to try something different. And I think that we're still, like, finding our sound, and, like, a producer could come along and say, you know, like, this is the vision that I'm having for you, because, you know, like, we're kind of, like, subjected to the music that we make, right? And someone having, like, an objective viewpoint of, like, you know, you guys don't even know what you're doing, and this is what you're capturing, and this is, you know, I feel like I could, you know, capture this for you. If I was a producer, that's how I think I would approach things, is that I try to capture something that, you know, a band doesn't even know that they're really capturing, having a larger picture or larger scope.
Now, obviously, I'm certain you're quite happy to be in C. Perry, but if you could switch places for one day with, like, a band that's doing extremely well on the planet right now, who would that be and why?
It's hard to think of, like, one particular person. I definitely like to be in a position where anything that I do musically or creatively is something that's valued, you know? And like, I think that you have to have, like, some kind of reputation to have that credibility, right? So I don't know who embodies that. Like Dallas Green from Alexis on Fire, you know, he's a Canadian guy. And I think that's, you know, it's like, I'm really proud of somebody like that, you know, where they were appreciated in a completely different genre than what they're currently doing, but it was, like, widely accepted. And I think that, like, the whole time that people, I really liked Alexis on Fire, and I liked their whole vibe and their genre. But I think something that would be, someone would notice, they'd say, wow, this music's really heavy and there's a lot of crazy stuff going on, but wow, listen to the voice that's going on from this guy. Like, it's beautiful, you know what I mean? So, I don't know.
Talk to us about your latest single, Molly's Shoes. You know, I've listened to the track. It's definitely something that gets you up and makes you want to move around. Was that a conscious decision for you guys to release that, like, knowing that it was sort of this high-octane song? And are there more like those songs on the way, like an album?
Yeah, like, I'd say on the album, it's definitely, like, we do have, if you come to a show, I mean, our music's definitely bouncy, and we like to, like, we come from a punk rock, like, kind of, you know, like, that's like our backbone, and, like, we like to move around, and we like to jump around, and we like to get crazy and stuff like that. I mean, like, it's just natural that, like, the live show that's going to come out. But, like, Molly's Shoes is definitely, like, an exception of, the kind of message that it has. Like, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty visceral song, you know, like, the whoa, whoa, whoas on it is like, you know, a caveman smashing a rock against another rock to, you know, express an emotion, you know what I mean? And like, it's not necessarily a specific emotion. It's just, you know, like, being happy or being in love or being, you know, angry. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty straight up song of, you know, just like that. And it kind of stands out a little bit on the album like that, but yeah.
How does your writing sessions go for new music? Like, you know, is it all three of you together? Does Chad start things off? Like, how does it work?
Like, in a lot of bands that I've been in, it'll be like, you know, somebody or myself will come to the table with an idea, and then, you know, everybody like takes their piece and, you know, tries to make that a song. With us, it's completely, completely different, down to every single piece of it, you know, whether it be, you know, what I'm playing on the keyboard or what I'm like doing on bass or what Chad's doing on the drums. And we write like all the vocals majorly all together as well. And we have a really good dynamic this way. We also argue a lot, but we immensely, immensely love each other. So it's a weird thing to have. I think if most bands that I was in, we had the kind of sessions that we have, they probably quit, because we definitely bring each other to an emotional place that's very fragile and very vulnerable. And, you know, you can get a lot of like pure happiness or pure anger, but, you know, like, it's not in a negative way. It's just, you know, you want your idea so bad because you're so passionate about it. You know, you're fighting for that idea. Like, and that's how all of us are. You know, we argue because we care like so immensely about, you know, making, you know, a certain part, you know, in a song, the greatest it can be. So. Mm-hmm.
And what is up next for you guys? Like, lots more. I know you mentioned off the top that you know, you're happy to travel. Is there lots of touring in your future?
Yeah. Well, we're doing an East Coast tour in Canada in April 17th. That's launching off. So we're going to be going up to Halifax and all kinds of places out there. I don't even know all the dates yet, but I know it's from April 17th to the 26th, I believe, that we're going to be in the East Coast.
Okay. So, and any intention of heading overseas at some point, Sean?
Yeah, well, we're looking at, you know, we've been talking about the UK. We've been talking about the US. I think, like, that's something that we're looking forward more maybe in the fall. I know that we're going to, like, Yellowknife in July.
Okay.
Which is kind of crazy. You know, we might as well travel across seas, you know, to go to Yellowknife. But, yeah, all the stuff, you know, is in talks and, you know, just trying to work out and, you know, publicists and stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of things that go in the background that make it necessary to go, mm-hmm. or make it so that you have to wait, right?
Now, Sean, do you finally feel like this is the band, you know, because I was reading, you know, the band's bio and it sounds like the three of you really have found something special. Do you think this is the one that's going to stick and take you where you want to go?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm ready to, you know, put everything on the line for, and I feel like we are actually, as we speak, you know, we're putting everything on the line because, you know, we are an independent band, you know, like, we don't have a choice really, like, for this to be the band, you know, like, we're in it and we're in it till the end, you know, like, we're gonna do something or kill ourselves trying, you know what I mean? I guess 50 Cent said it best, right?
That's awesome. Very good. Sean, well, we wish you all the best and you're welcome back on the show anytime. So good luck.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kelly.
That is Sean Fisher, bassist for the group C. Perry. Again, make sure to check out their website, cperry.com.
Hi, this is Sean Fisher from C. Perry and you're hanging out with Kelly on the Kelly Alexander Show.
let's shake the night away.
Next guest is a jazz musician who has recently released his debut CD called Moving Forward. Robbie Botos is a respected jazz pianist in Toronto and has worked extremely hard on his new album and is here to tell us all about it, as well as what it takes to be a successful jazz artist in this day and age. Robbie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Robbie, how did you actually start your musical career? Did you start as a child learning the piano?
Yes, well, you know, I grew up in a musical family, so I started out on all kinds of instruments, including drums. That was my first instrument I picked up, and then at age 7, I switched to piano.
Were you drawn to the genre of jazz at a young age? Like, did you always know you were sort of heading down that path as opposed to, let's say, rock?
Well, I heard a lot of different types of music at home, but jazz was one of them, and I started to fall in love with it because I realized that you can be more in the moment and you can improvise and make up your own thing, which was very, very exciting to me. And I heard a lot of great jazz at home. So that got me going for sure.
How old were you when you composed your first jazz composition?
Wow. I think around age 9, I started to write. That's about it.
And did you like composing right away? Like, was it more fun to compose your own music as opposed to playing other people's material?
I always loved playing my original music. And this is, I was a pretty lazy classical student because I always wanted to improvise. So obviously I loved playing my own thing more than anything back then.
Now, are you influenced mainly by other jazz musicians, or do you pull inspiration from a lot of different genres? I know that you do have a connection to jazz legend Oscar Peterson, which I'd love you to talk about, but I was wondering if there's other elements to it as well.
Yes, well, there's so many. It's just no time to name all of them, but Oscar Peterson is definitely one of my main influences and early influences. Also, Kenny Kirkland, Bill Evans, Hampton Hawes, all kinds of different pianists from very different eras of jazz. So I'm a huge fan of those, and there's way more than that.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is jazz pianist Robbie Botos. Check out his website, robbiebotos.com. Your new album is called Moving Forward. Can you explain why you chose that title and, you know, what the album involves and what it means to you as a musician?
I'm very happy to have this album, and this basically represents a lot of different angles of my musical background, including straight ahead jazz, some traditional Hungarian folk and gypsy music, some funky music, so all kinds of different elements, and I consider it as my debut album. Moving forward, I think it comes out of, you know, moving into a more of a world international stage, having a Grammy-winning performance on it. First time I recorded with U.S. players as well, so as my own album. So now I have a kind of like a dream theme on the album. So I think that represents moving forward. And also, as you might guess, music business is not the easiest business out there. And, you know, there are times when you feel like, you know, it's a struggle, but moving forward stands for that too. You just can't stop. You got to create.
Can you let people know where you're actually from and how you ended up in Canada?
Yes, I'm originally from Hungary, and I left Hungary in 1998. I immigrated to Canada. I wanted to live in a multicultural place where people don't discriminate you, and also you get a chance to be who you want to be.
Now, having come from, you know, a country overseas to now living in Canada, have you noticed a difference between, you know, maybe how jazz audiences receive music over there as opposed to how things work over here in Canada?
Yes, it is different, but I think it's a global thing. There's just a lot of people very hungry for live music and jazz music. And, you know, sometimes it's different. But I think as a musician, I felt like that I'm very welcomed in Canada, and that's what really I always remember, that when I started playing here, I had a lot of people come up to me and show appreciation to my music, which was great. And I think that sometimes when you become a local somewhere, that fades away a little bit. So I think that when we talk about Europe as outsiders, it's a little different than when we lived there and when we were there. So when I talk to musicians, you know, I think they have different experiences in each country you go to. But generally, I think Canadian audience is really good.
How do you feel the state of jazz is doing, whether here in Canada or abroad? Do you think it's healthy? Do you think more people need to pay more attention to it, especially, you know, teaching kids more about jazz and getting them interested in a career in, or at least a passion for jazz music when they're learning instruments?
I think it's extremely important to teach the youth about jazz music and, like, music in general. I think we're definitely lacking that there should be more music and improvised music, jazz music. People don't realize how much relief it can be, how healthy it is to make music and have fun with it. And I don't think people realize, because we have so much music everywhere we go to, but I don't think people really realize how important music is. And just think about how much of your internet usage goes for music and streaming, or you know, once in a while when they turn off the music in a mall, everybody thinks it's closing, so they start getting out of there, you know,
right?
Because it's there all the time. So it's very important to teach kids, and I'm very, very happy to teach at Humber College, so I have a chance to pass on music to younger people. So that's awesome.
Now, I live here in Montreal. The show is broadcast around the world on the internet, and also we're fortunate to have some radio stations playing us over in Australia and Japan and some other countries. But when it comes to Toronto and Montreal, Montreal has a world-renowned jazz festival each and every summer. I'm not sure if you've come to it yet, Robbie, but do you feel there's a difference between cities and how jazz is interpreted in Canada?
I think there's a difference. I've been a part of Montreal Jazz Festival. I actually won the TD Grand Prize there a while back, which was an honor. And I think that Montreal has just the most amazing festival in Canada. I don't think anybody doubts that. And it's, of course, world famous. And everyone I talk to, musicians, love it. I love it a lot. So I hope that the rest of Canada and the rest of a lot of places in North America can, you know, kind of study it like we do in music. We look at some of the great players and we copy them. So in a healthy level, I think it's very helpful for other Canadian festivals to have a great example like the Montreal Jazz Festival.
Getting back to your album for a moment, do you have a particular song on the album that stands out for you, or are they all important in different ways?
I think they're all important in different ways, and they represent a pretty wide angle of my musical background. I'm glad that it includes some of my Hungarian, Romani, Gypsy background, and there's also some, you know, danceable grooves on there, and also some straight-ahead jazz.
Now that the album is out, what is up next for you over the next 12 months? Is it going to be a lot of touring or dates in Toronto? Do you hope to go overseas to play?
Well, there's a summer tour in the works, so I'm pretty sure that I'll get to Montreal soon. And that's very exciting. And also, I'm looking at going to a lot of places in Canada and also to expand the performances to the U.S. And Europe and hopefully Asia as well. So I'm working hard on it, and I really hope that's going to happen soon because I really want to bring this music to a lot of places.
Have you ever felt the need, Robbie, to maybe move to New York or move to Los Angeles, or are you happy and think you can survive being a jazz musician in Toronto?
I considered many times of moving to New York or LA. My situation is a little different because I do have kids, so I wanted to make sure that they have a great place to be, and that's why I originally chose Canada to be here to raise a family. And I still spend some time in New York and LA, not enough, but I mean, the music scene at those places are also great. And I think it's very important to be around, but I'm hoping that with the technology of today, with all the social networks, it's easier to get a little bit more international. But I also received a great welcome from the Canadian musicians and the audiences. So I'm very grateful to be here, and I think it's a great place to be. But as a musician, I try to travel to those places and collaborate with musicians from there.
Excellent. Well, Robbie, we really appreciate you spending time with us on the show this week, and we wish you all the best.
I really appreciate to be on, for sure. Thank you so much.
That is fantastic. That is jazz pianist Robbie Botos. Again, check out his website, robbiebotos.com.
Thank you.
the Kelly Alexander Show.
A big thank you, as always, for spending time with us on the show this week. And thank you going out to my guests, Tortia Lynn, C. Perry, and Robbie Botos. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Corey Ten Boom. Worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It empties today of its strength. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram, at Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Have an excellent week. If you have any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I'll chat soon.